2, 8, 2. Bonus episode.
Welcome to another extended near editless version of one of our features. This time it's US TV series turned into films. I've left out the bitter argument about the Addams Family versus the Munsters. The goth culture wars are getting out of hand. In this section, part one of a two-parter, we're going to discuss films which are remakes of television programmes. We're concerned here with films which are complete remakes, reboots or continuations of a theme, even origin stories. We're concentrating on this first section on American TV series to films, and we're not going to be tackling any foreign language films, unfortunately, in this section. That rules out the likes of La Casa de la Flores, which is just about to be remade, if anyone knows what that is. But we will be discussing Dad's Army 1971, because in the second part, we'll be taking on British films. And I don't think anyone in human history has mentioned those two films in the same sentence.
Until now.
Until now. It seems like there's been very little that's not been pillaged or made of a jump. And Kevin, you have a comprehensive number of films to cover here.
Yeah, I do, yeah. Yeah, so, cheers, Dave. So, yeah, ask anyone to name a TV series that has since found its way onto the big screen. And those of a certain age will probably come up with the likes of Star Trek, Mission Impossible and The Addams Family. But how many more were there out there? And were they any good? Shall we start with Star Trek? I think we better start with Star Trek, don't
yeah,
you?
I think so.
Yeah. So, yeah, Star Trek, the original series, started in 1966. William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy et al. Since then, loads of spin-off series, including Star Trek The Next Generation, Voyager, Enterprise, Picard, Strange New Worlds, plus numerous cartoons. But only the original and The Next Generation have gone on to the big screen, with six entries from the original cast members, one crossover with The Next Generation, plus three more from Picard and his crew, all reprising their roles. What do you think of the films, Bill?
Well, I think the first one, you know, looking at them for what they are, is quite good, but it's not as good as the sense. So I'm kind of quoting my kind of late partner's opinions here. She thought they developed, and as the cast members seemed to get more sort of saying what they were doing, you know, is it the second one's The Wrath of Khan, or is that the
second
one's
Wrath of Khan? Yeah.
It's like the as they went along, and there's that one where the dolphins kind of come down to earth and things. She really loved that one, and she thought they were getting very, you know, cosmic and sort of esoteric. I think that Spock directed that one, maybe. Leonard Nimoy.
He directed Search for Spock, I remember that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first one's pretty, it's quite a good bog-standard film in one sense. Sure, if Wrath of Khan is quite as good as the first one. But then they start getting a bit better then.
I really liked Wrath of Khan because I thought it was from a short story, some space seed, wasn't it, originally?
Oh, right, I didn't know those sort of details.
And so there was an episode, and then obviously Ricardo Montalban came back as Khan, didn't he?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I thought it was like a space western, more than anything.
Right, yeah.
And I really enjoyed that one. But I liked the majesty of the, you know, the slow-moving things. It was a bit, the first one was a little bit like 2001, I thought.
Yeah, well, I think they made a big attempt to kind of keep it in with the feel of the TV series, didn't they, as well?
Star Trek was also rebooted in 2009 with a whole new cast playing the original characters in an alternative universe, with Chris Pine playing James T. Kirk and Simon Pegg as Scotty. Bill, Dave, can you remember what the T stands for in James T. Kirk?
It's
It's a Roman name. I want to say
Philopodis
or something. Yeah. Tiberius.
You've got it.
Yeah, only because it's right in the back of my brain.
Yeah. It's always a good question to ask, is that one. So, yeah, moving on to Mission Impossible, one of the greats. I loved Mission Impossible. 1966 to 1973, and again from 1988, just for two seasons, though. Peter Graves was the only one to return in the 1988.
Joseph Cotton's brother.
Yes, exactly. The only other person to return was Bob Johnson, the unseen voice of the tape, which said, "The tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds."
Yeah. Never long enough.
It's never long enough, is it?
That became part of my teenage humour with my friends, you know.
Yeah.
So. Yep, same here.
Yeah. Oh, we all used. I think we all used it.
Of course, he had the great Martin Landau in it, didn't it?
In the series, and Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah, before he was in Star Trek, in fact.
Mm.
In fact, I kind of recognised him from Mission Impossible when he started being in Star Trek. Mm.
Yeah. So in 1996, the big screen debut for what has now become a franchise. Jim Phelps is played by John Voight, with Tom Cruise as Ethan Hunt. 7 films, with part 2 of film 7 due for release in 2025. These are all great, great films. I think Tom Cruise has done a fabulous job with them. He even had to
combat
COVID as well, didn't he, in one of them?
I just saw the first one and I was quite pleasantly surprised that it was good.
Yeah, I've seen all of them. No, actually, the most recent one,
the part one,
I didn't get to see. Yeah. I will do it at some point on streaming.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting how they reimagined the world of Bond.
Mm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
At a time when the Bond films are getting a little bit stale
and
a bit of pastiche.
Mm.
Although they've always been a bit of pastiche, really.
They were still fun, but they were grown up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise reboot has all the sort of action and the humour and the drama and sort of throttles along quite happily.
Mm. Well, you could say that the TV series, in a way, was influenced by that 60s trope of gizmos and the espionage.
Mm. So,
well, he's in the shadow of a Cold War, and you want to know that there are some talented, skilled people behind the scenes, not the reality of secret services and spies, but a happy fantasy.
Mm.
Well, part of that happy fantasy is they always invent some kind of strange, faceless criminal organisation.
We need an episode on this. Yeah. I'm always amused by all these spectres and cobras and so on.
Which are in Thunderbirds, of course.
Everything in Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
They're everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like it goes back to that 20s idea of Fu Manchu.
Mm.
You know, the world has not seen the last of me.
Mm.
You know, this.
But an interesting thing of the 60s onwards is that they are corporations, usually.
Mm.
Yeah.
So if our heroes aren't fighting the commies, they're fighting capitalists who are out of control.
Well, that's an interesting thing with the kind of modern leaning towards conspiracies and Bilderberg groups and stuff.
Mm.
That if you look at Fritz Lang film 1929, Woman in the Moon, there's some kind of faceless group of plutocrats that are going to take over this guy's moon mission, you know.
Mm. Mm.
And so these ideas are always there, weren't they?
Interesting.
Well, we're going to move on from Mission Impossible now.
Oh, what's coming now? I think I know.
Do-do-do-do. Yes.
Am I allowed to do that?
That takes us away from conspiracies and all that nonsense.
From the sublime to the sublime.
Yes. Yeah. The Addams Family. I loved The Addams Family. I thought it was brilliant. 3 seasons, 1964 to 66, starring John Astin as Gomez and Carolyn Jones as Morticia, a family who find normality in the macabre. Which they do, don't they? I mean, it's fabulous, isn't it? This was followed by numerous reboots and animated versions. A TV movie, Halloween with the Addams Family, was produced in 1977, including most of the original cast. But it wasn't until 1991 when the first big screen version of the Addams Family arrived, with Angelica Houston and Raul Julia in the starring roles. It's a long time. Long time.
Well, must be so firmly in people's minds.
But we might discuss this a bit further on, but yes, it's interesting that the whole gamut is here, that some things go straight to screen and other things decades and decades later.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's because I think in those early days it reflected the predominance, even if it wasn't there in reality, of the idea of the big screen film presentation was that your TV thing, which was seen as a second-class citizen, had actually made it if the series was made into a film.
Onto the big screen, Exactly.
I know some contracts early on when TV was just emerging, people have contracts which included trying to make a film. And of course, with these big gaps, those times I'm going to discuss this now, these big gaps, that's partly down to development hell, that somebody might have an option on something for a decade or 2 decades and do rewrite after rewrite, pass it around the studios. But also, we've discussed before, it's cash, you know, what was popular in the past, or everyone loved Adam's Family. Let's get a film together.
Yeah, that's what happened. It was followed very, very quickly by Adam's Family Values in 1993, which was... both films were absolutely incredible.
Well, they did big box office, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, very, very big
box office.
Which
might not have happened. It's interesting. Like what Dave was saying, that it's so long after, and is it like all the older people are involved in executive roles in studios and things... It's like a childhood love of theirs.
But then the audience is the same. So the audience is made up of people who loved it when they were young.
And then
think, oh, we'll take the kids to that.
Exactly. Yeah, as we said, it's very successful and still going strong with, you know, even with the animated features. You know, there was one in 2019 and one in 2021. So it's still coming.
Yeah, and we may well discuss in another episode of things going the other way, films into TV, and of course in this world of extended universes and franchises, which goes on. But it's worth just mentioning Wednesday on Netflix, which is a continuation of the Addams story, and it's, I haven't seen it, Kevin, but you have.
Wednesday is one of the best things I have ever seen on TV. It should be on the big screen, really.
Yeah,
it is that good. And so, I can't speak more highly.
Yeah, so I think we're going to come back to these themes in the future.
I was just going returning to the Addams Family thing, because it feeds into that sort of, hey, it's goth, man. You know, it's you know, it's like this whole sort of horror film, but almost like cartoonish. You know, that's there, and you see it in so many different ways.
That's true. Yeah,
I mean, you know, the Tim Burton thing with the that kind of slightly animated thing, the Christmas thing,
Corpse Bride.
Well, Wednesday's directed by him,
right? Is it right?
Hang on, and is there you might be thinking of the Nightmare Before Christmas?
Yeah,
that's a similar sort of thing. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They
all have a certain look, don't they?
Yeah, the joy of horror.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be honest now. So as a kid, I actually didn't really get the Addams Family humour.
Well, that's you were being very young.
I was too young for it, but I got it eventually, and I think it's brilliant now. But at the time, I didn't.
Well, I preferred the other one you're going to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you've read my mind. I did get the monsters. I really did get the monsters. Oh. It did seem more kid friendly.
Were they more lovable?
Yeah.
And it had in Monte Carlo in it.
And it.
Because I was into my film stars. Yeah.
So, yeah, the Monsters ran for 2 seasons from 1964 with 70 episodes, 6 more than The Addams Family. It featured Fred Gwynne as Herman Munster, and, as you've just said, Yvonne DiCarlo as his wife, the vampiric Lily. Herman's makeup made him a dead ringer for Boris Karloff's version of Frankenstein's monster as well.
In a silly kind of way.
I remember having like an Airfix model of Frankenstein that had a glowing head and hands.
Frankenstein's monster.
So the monster's big screen moment, entitled Monster Go Home, came in 1966 and starred most of the original cast. I mean, when you think about it, you know, it took a long, long time for the Addams Family to get up there on the big screen, but it was virtually near enough straight away with the monsters. which I'm not complaining about.
Yeah, but Kevin, that fits in with what I was trying to say already. Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering why they took so long with the Addams Family then.
It'd be interesting to know about the studio setup and the options discussed. Yeah. If somebody might have said at the time, "Oh, this would go well to film," and it doesn't come together because can't find a producer. The options are held by somebody else.
Yeah.
Now I know the Addams Family were based on a set of cartoon strips.
Yes.
Were the Munsters? What was the background of Munsters?
I don't know where that came from, to be honest.
So my first thought, I wonder if the options on the original cartoons were difficult to organise.
It could be even that the Munsters have got their film out first. You know, what chance are we going to have? They've got a film out.
Yeah, maybe. So, yeah, in Munster Go Home, they travel to England to visit the manor house they've just inherited. Terry Thomas also stars. And unlike the series, it's in colour.
Have you got this film?
Yeah. I have.
I want to see it.
You will see it, sir.
I was going to say Ding Dong. I didn't pronounce it Ding Dong.
Yes, I have got it. Yes. And it's very good, actually. So following that, there was a couple of made-for-TV productions. But then Rob Zombie, what a great name for a film director.
Yeah, he must have made that.
He was hired to write and direct a Munsters origin story entitled The Munsters, obviously. It was released in 2022. Sadly, due to COVID, it didn't make it into the cinemas. I'm sure it would have done very well. Have you seen that as well? Yes.
Of course you have.
It's very colourful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It is. All of these Munsters and Addams Family, they're all worth catching up on.
Yeah, well, I've not seen the Addams Family films either.
You haven't?
No, no, I'm terrible.
Bill, you're terrible.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, we'll put it right.
Too much obscure Eastern European cinema.
Yeah. We'll put it right. We'll put it right.
Just for Bill's enlightenment, Rob Zombie was born Robert Bartlett Cummings.
Right.
And was a singer, a musician in White Zombie, which I'd never heard of, actually.
Oh, right.
Heavy metal band.
Heavy metal band, yeah.
They didn't play soundtracks to Italian horror films, did they?
That was Goblin.
Yeah.
So let's leave the Addams Family and the Munsters and go to Batman.
Oh, right, Batman.
Adam West's Batman. It made it into the cinemas in 1966 with the Caped Crusader and Robin, the Boy Wonder, trying to stop four of their greatest foes in Catwoman, the Penguin, the Riddler and the Joker. What I liked about all these things is that they're always... When you get them close to the actual series, then you normally get all the actors that were in the original series.
Of course, around that time, Little Bill was watching, or Little William was going to Saturday Matinees and seeing that 1940s Batman series,
which is very good.
You know,
it is very good.
Leo J. Carroll in it, you know, as a Japanese evil guy that runs a mock ghost train where all sorts of shenanigans are going on.
Going to be honest again here, this was the second film to make me cry in the cinema.
All right.
Because I thought Batman had died.
Oh, right.
The only other film that made me cry was Bambi.
Oh, well, I think people used to cry regularly at Bambi, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Funnily enough, it was a film I never saw.
Well worth seeing.
Bambi or... Batman.
I haven't seen both, but
you haven't seen the film Batman.
No. I was.
Don't look at me.
I was somebody who didn't like the Batman series.
Yeah, like same here.
Because as a kid, I took things too seriously, and it was too silly for me.
It was too slapstick for me as well.
With all that bam, whim, pow, and then walking along on the ground looking like they're walking at war. But Kevin, I must say. That, you know, when I was going through all this in my mind as a kid, when the Adam West was on and I was enjoying my Batman at the cinema, I felt exonerated because they mentioned the 1940s one on Blue Peter.
Well, okay, yeah.
And I felt that was a seal of approval for me.
Mm. I did like the you know, that
Where
version.
Did you see it then, at cinema?
No, it was on some streaming site.
Oh,
recently.
Modena, in your third childhood.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it was. Yeah,
I'd like to see some of it again. Actually,
it is very, very good. It was on some streaming site for nothing, and then suddenly they started charging for it. Which, I mean, I had seen them all by then. So.
And of course, you know, mean clocking that Leo J. Carroll was in it is going to lead us into other things, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Kevin, what's next?
So, Bill.
Yes.
Do you remember The Untouchables?
I certainly used to watch that.
Mm.
You know, like those flames, Rico.
Yes.
Heroin, Rico.
Yeah.
As he takes a big kind of lick of this white powder.
Robert Stack.
Yeah.
I thought Robert Stack was brilliant. I really did. I thought he was a great Elliot Ness. 118 episodes, two-part pilot. But it took until 1987 for the feature to come along. Kevin Costner, Sean Connery, who won an Academy Award for his best supporting actor role. It did very well, actually. Did very, very well.
Yeah, but it's a classic big budget Hollywood film, and it's barely a scene missing. Mm. It's all fantastic.
But it is. It's brilliant.
But I've seen it several times. Mm.
And also, I haven't seen it, but you could argue that you're not sort of turning a TV series into a movie because these are actual people.
Mm. Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And,
yeah.
You know, you're just doing a thing about their prohibition and their story, aren't they? Well, of course, when prohibition ended, they went into other stuff, didn't they, like the heroin.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, it was directed by Brian De Palma, which I think is a very accomplished director. And I think it's one of the best big screen adaptions of any of these.
Well, he's a gangster guy, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. So I mean, he did Blowout with John Travolta.
Oh, the one that's sort of like the Edward Kennedy sort of car accident thing. Yeah, yeah, that's quite good.
Which I thought was very, very good. So back to espionage, 1965, Get Smart.
Now, this is one where I don't know it.
You don't know. You don't know this.
No, no. Right. Sounds like I should do.
Yeah, yeah. You've brought on a flashback for me because I recall it quite well.
It is. It was incredibly funny. Obviously, Buck Henry and Mel Brooks created it, so it's going to be really funny, isn't it?
Yep.
You can't beat Mel Brooks. So, so good. Starred Don Adams as Agent 86, Maxwell Smart, an inept spy. It's a great ride as Smart and his fellow agents battle against an organised crime outfit called Chaos. I mean, how ridiculous. they had these ridiculous names, didn't they? You know, like we said before.
Is it better than Flint?
I just loved it. I just thought it was fantastic. They actually did a feature in 1980, the Nude Bomb, it was called. But Buck Henry and Mel Brooks, they weren't involved in it, so I don't think it was taken that seriously, really. After the made-for-TV reunion movie, Get Smart Again, in 1989, Get Smart was revived as a TV series again in 1995 and ran for 7 episodes before being cancelled. I mean, they were getting older and older, these guys, weren't they? You know, it was...
Yeah, I think the problem was that it originally, of course, prefigures Police Squad and so on. We're going to talk about that soon.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But by later on, of course, it was seen in a shadow of that.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
I'm not surprised that they had 7 episodes of it, one series. I mean, but it was extremely funny.
Mm. I mean, as you said, Police Squad, it... obviously, on the big screen became The Naked Gun, didn't it? And there was a few spin-offs from that as well. Fabulous, fabulous comedy. I mean, it's if anybody's ever seen Airplane, those kind of things, it's up there with those, isn't it, really?
The transition of Leslie Nielsen from being a serious actor...
Serious actor.
...to doing some of the best sight gags and one-liners.
Are we talking Forbidden Planet now?
Yeah. He was fantastic in the TV series and the films.
I mean, you always had to watch what was going on behind as well.
Yeah.
Because there was all sorts of things going on.
And the credit scenes where
they all froze. Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, but unfortunately would still be pouring coffee out or something.
Yeah. Fabulous. They're absolutely fabulous. So, two animations that made it onto the big screen in live action, Scooby-Doo and the Flintstones. Well, worth talking about anyway.
You mentioned Scooby. I know the Flintstones movie got panned critically, but it's actually, most people enjoyed it. I think it did fairly well.
I enjoyed it.
John Goodman.
I think he's always a class act for these sort of things, isn't he?
Yeah.
But the thing is, you're always in danger when you turn a cartoon into live action, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's always a...
Yeah, I seem to recall Flintstones relied heavily on big sets and, you know, animatronics. Yeah. Scooby, of course, the film version, it's got a CGI dog.
A CGI Scooby-Doo, yeah. I mean, everybody's there. It's a good cast, you know. Freddie Prinze Jr., Sarah Michelle Gellar, Matthew Laird and Linda Cardellini. There's Fred Daphne, Shaggy and Velma, and like you say, a CGI Scooby-Doo. It works.
Is the Gala woman the Buffy woman?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And she's very good, isn't she? I thought she was fabulous.
And the Shaggy's quite convincing as well.
I think of all of them, he's the most convincing.
Which carries it off.
Mm. Yeah, as far as the Flintstones go, two movies, the first of which stars John Guzman, as you said, and Rick Moranis as Barney. And I thought Rick Moranis was great. Elizabeth Perkins as Wilma and Rosie O'Donnell as Betty. Sadly, it was Elizabeth Taylor's final screen appearance as Pearl Slag Hoople, Wilma's mother.
I know, what a way to go out.
What a way to go out.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Movie legend.
She was a trooper, though. She wouldn't have, you know.
I think she'll have had a laugh. I think she'd have had a real laugh about it.
Yeah.
There was a prequel as well to the Flintstones in Viva Rock Vegas from the year 2000. It tells the story of how the four of them met. Stars Mark Addy. There's Fred, Stephen Baldwin as Barney.
It's a forgettable film.
Yeah. Yeah. I just...
You look like you're struggling to remember it.
Yeah. Oh, no, I can remember it.
etched into his memory.
Yeah, no, I can remember it very, very well. It just, you know, I enjoyed the first one. And I don't know why they went backwards. They could have done it in a cartoon.
Mm.
You know, they didn't really need to do that. They could have even used those people. And they could have written it better, yeah. So as I say, of the two films, the first one is by far the best. So kind of staying with the animation side, the makers of South Park, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, scored an Academy Award nomination for the best original song, Blame Canada, for South Park, Bigger, Longer and Uncut. What a great title that is. It's a musical, and I think it's a brilliant addition to the series. I think it's fabulous. I just wish they'd make more. I know they've gone into the, you know, making video games and everything, but I wish they'd make more film.
How does that compare with the Simpsons movie? And is it the same sort of thing?
I actually hated the Simpsons movie, to be honest.
Right. I think it's got some of the best gags in it, better than the TV series.
Really?
Yeah, but I'm wondering, just in terms of it, is that sort of... We're borderline here with our theme, aren't we?
Mm.
Because it's just a continuation of the both South Park and Simpsons, not just extended episodes. Mm.
So, moving on, one of the great series from 1963 through to 1967 was The Fugitive, starring David Janssen as Dr. Richard Kimball.
I thought it'd never end when I was a kid.
It was fabulous, wasn't it?
Well, I kind of liked it, but at the same time I thought, is this ever going to come to an end?
Mm-hmm. it's plays...
It's grown-up for me, you know.
Mm, yeah. He plays Dr. Richard Kimball, a man who goes on the run after being falsely accused of murdering his wife. So who is the one-armed man, Bill, seen running away from the murder scene?
That's what you wonder for a long time.
Exactly. And will Dr. Kimball be able to clear his name before Police Lieutenant Philip Girard catches up with him? These are the questions. And like you say, it did take a long time, but it was brilliant. It really was brilliant. Harrison Ford... he stars as Kimball in the 1993 big screen version, and it is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I remember liking that when I saw it.
So, so good. One of the best screen adaptations ever made.
Well, you know it's going to be... Once you see it's Harrison on screen, you know it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And then Tommy Lee turns up and it's like, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, of course, it's some years later, isn't it, really? Again,
1993,
we've got this whole thing like, who remembers the fugitive? They must be impressed on some people's brains and their DNA. You know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. As I said in my opening comments, you know, sometimes, you know, it depends what age you are. So, you know, a lot of people, like you say, won't even know that there was a TV series behind
it.
Which is, you know, which is fine.
Doesn't matter. If the film stands alone.
As long as you've got journalists in film magazines telling you that it's coming and go see it, it's all that matters, isn't it, really?
Or a podcast.
Or a podcast, yeah. Exactly, exactly. So, yeah, moving on. Twin Peaks. Have you seen Twin Peaks, Bill?
I've only seen Fire Walk With Me, actually.
Oh, you've only seen the
prequel? Only little bits out of the thing. I've got it.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I've got enough life. Mm. No, I mean, I will. I think I might watch it. But I liked Firewalk. Well, I liked David Lynch films at the time, so I did like Firewalk With Me.
Yeah, brilliant.
And I understood it. It was a standalone thing. Mm. I knew enough about the series to know that how it fits in.
So yeah, Kyle MacLachlan plays Special Agent Dale Cooper, the man sent by the FBI to investigate the murder of Laura Palmer. This series, created by David Lynch and Mark Frost, ran for two seasons, but like you say, there was a prequel, Fire Walk With Me. No, I thought it was brilliant. I really, really did. Well, I liked how it was made.
Well, it spawned to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, it spawned to me a whole kind of, using another word which I wouldn't like to use, raft of well-known directors suddenly going to television and creating a slightly surreal TV series. Like there's Oliver Stone, there's Lars von Trier. You know, well, he probably did the weirdest, didn't he, with The Kingdom. He started that kind of thing, and it was almost the idea which might have led to be a precursor to the HBO sort of movie production sort of series world, that, you know, this opened the door to that, because you had these cinema directors suddenly doing these what you might say in inverted commas, classy TV. Because again, I think that thing that I was talking about earlier on, this prejudice against television, even lingers in some ways, even in the modern world.
Yeah,
and somehow films are better.
Yeah, I think it has changed now.
It has now.
There's a lot of people sort of, you know, in both codes.
Well, really. I mean, now a lot of films are just tired franchises, aren't they? And
The other thing is the development of the international market. So if you look through the 60s and 70s, you've got each nation, each company making their own stuff, and things get distributed. The American TV series make it to Britain, and a little bit goes the way. Now, good God, just mention anything and there'll be a version in every continent franchised out.
Yeah,
they will. So game shows are the most obvious thing, but things like Love Island and so on, and it doesn't matter how ridiculous.
Oh, sorry, Dave.
I forgot that was a hypnotism word for you. You're feeling very Love Island.
Well, actually, for some reason, What's Up Tiger Lily's just come in my head. To do with that whole idea of that 1960s sort of espionage with gizmo films, that when Woody Allen found one made in the Far East and put a zany comic soundtrack on it, you know.
And it worked.
You know. So what I'm trying to say is, in the Far East, they were making those sort of films.
So the third season of Twin Peaks finally arrived in 2017. It was like
I heard about
release.
That. Yeah, yeah.
Very, very off the wall. The wall.
I was suspicious, but you know,
I haven't got a clue what it was about.
Well, he is a self-confessed surrealist, David Lynch,
and you need to see it. You really do need to see it all, and try and understand it. Because,
wow, you're slapping the gauntlet down now.
Oh yes,
not one of these things you need to watch two or three times, is it?
I don't think you could.
No, right. too harrowing.
A lot of people return. There's a lot, because don't forget, it's 25 years after. So a lot of people do return, which is great. But what was it about? So other series to score quite highly are the film versions of The Beverly Hillbillies, Starsky and Hutch, Lost in Space, The Twilight Zone, 21 Jump Street and its sequel 22 Jump Street, and two features from The X-Files in Fight the Future in 1998 and I Want to Believe in 2008. Both worthwhile entries, I thought.
Yeah, I've got some to add to that as well. You've got Jetsons, which they did an animated version of.
They did.
Phil Silvers came back as Sergeant Bilko. Because most people think the original was called Sergeant Bilko. It wasn't. It was Phil Silvers' show.
Phil Silvers' show, of course.
And our favourite was Sergeant Bilko, Steve Martin. And it's an extremely funny film.
Ah, it got put down by some people, though, didn't it?
But raised up by others. Yeah. The righteous knew it was a comedy classic.
Yeah.
A-Team.
Of course.
Well, we forgot about them, haven't we?
No, I had them on my list.
Yeah.
And a trigger warning for Bill here, Bewitched.
Oh. You see, I really loved the film.
Me too.
I know it got slammed.
No, I thought it was funny.
But
was
I liked what they did with it.
Yeah, I thought it was a good film.
I liked the way they did it.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, of course, this has been going on since TV began. I mean, I Love Lucy was a film quite early on. But Missing Presumed in Development, Mary Tyler Moore show, never came out as anything.
It didn't.
Rhoda.
Nope.
Another favourite of ours, Bill, Soap.
Soap.
If fantastic. Only it was a film of soap.
Soap was fantastic.
Cheers as well.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Mary Tyler Moore was out of Dick Van Dyke, wasn't she?
She was his wife.
Yeah.
And Taxi, the Danny DeVito vehicle.
Full of other weird people.
People we love, Bill. Our people.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
It was incredible. Was Taxi?
Yeah, DeVito did say I think in about 2009 he'd like a film version to come out, but no sign of it yet.
Even the music just gets me every time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, it was one of those Rhoda, and then Taxi and Soap were things we never missed in my house.
Mm. Oh yeah.
MASH.
And MASH as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant stuff. Right, I just want to bring part one to a close with the film version of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It actually still baffles me to this day, this film. It's a great film with two very well-known characters in Napoleon Solo and Ilya Kuryakin. But what's my problem with it, Dave? Do you know?
What's it all about? It's just, it's a real pig's ear.
It is, isn't it? What on earth was Guy Ritchie, the director, thinking?
He took an absolute classic and he took the name and the characters and thought, well, we can throw everything else away.
Yeah, that's what he did.
it's watchable.
Yeah,
yeah,
it is.
It's quite amusing.
It is.
Yeah, yeah. But it's got bugger all to do with...
Yeah, it should have been called something else, really.
Yeah, yeah, you could have done, yeah.
You know, I mean, the TV version, it ran for 105 episodes from 1964 to 68. It's a huge favourite of mine. Robert Vaughan and David McCallum were superb. The double episodes, they were actually turned into films and put out on the cinema. Sometimes they added different music. There's a TV version, which I thought was really, really good, called The Return of the Man from U.N.C.L.E., the 15 Years Later Affair. And it featured a cameo from George Lazenby as JB, driving an Aston Martin. great.
But I have to say, you know, like I've said before, that I was a big fan of The Man from U.N.C.L.E., but it got, like with some other programmes at that time, I thought it got too daft. Towards the end, it got too daft.
A bit like the Avengers got a bit...
I didn't want to mention them because we were going to do British, but that was the other one. But
daft.
The Girl from U.N.C.L.E., I always thought that was too daft.
Mm. I liked the man with The Girl from U.N.C.L.E., to be honest. I did like it.
Yeah, well, you're younger and you're more into daft anyway.
Yeah, of course.
I was a very serious kid. Yeah. You know, I took my spies seriously.
Mm. Yes.
I didn't mind a bit of humour, don't get me wrong. But it had to be the right kind of humour.
Do you think you'd like Get Smart, Dave?
No.
No.
Hey, I do like Flynn.
I think he'd like Police Squad.
Yeah, I think you would.
Hey, I'm different now.
Yeah. Anyway, as of 2023, there is talk the long-awaited sequel to this Man from U.N.C.L.E. thing is still on the cards.
What, with Guy Ritchie?
Yeah, funny, I just hope it's a bit more like the Incredible TV series.
please.
Yeah. And, I don't think he will be somehow, do you?
The best of his work, you know, if he did it to that standard and try to get it back to the... But you got a problem, haven't you? If you've already gone off on a tangent, getting it back's going to be tricky.
I think he could bring it back.
We could get an old footballer to play somebody in it.
You know. A couple of lines.
Yeah. But there you are.
Somebody looks hard.
Yes. Well then, that was fairly comprehensive. We'll come back and do British TV to film. Thanks so much, Kevin. Thanks a lot, Bill. Thanks awfully for listening to this bonus episode of 5282. We will be back every Monday with extra content until the start of Series 2. In the meantime, don't forget to rate, review and even donate to 5282. And so, that seems to be all. Until we meet again, take care of yourself. Thank you for listening to this episode of 5282, which is a out of left field production. You can follow us on X at OOLF Presents 5282 and OOLF Presents 5282 on Facebook. And that's for numbers 5, 2, 8, and 2. The producer was Kevin Petch. Engineering and editing was by David Benn. Bill was tap dancing. 5282 is part of the Acast family.